listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
An absolute pleasure to welcome the leader of the ACT Party, the Deputy Prime Minister in waiting, David Seymour. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Peter. Good morning. How are you?
I'm not bad. You're working hard. A week off Parliament this week, is it?
Yeah, your property is safe. Parliament's not meetings. I can guarantee there'll be no bad laws made. However, we're back for 3 weeks in a row. And, of course, on the government side and the beehive, work carries on.
Now, the Treaty Principles Bill, it is now, the 5th of September. You said you wanted to introduce this before the end of the year. The end of the year is rapidly approaching. When is the bill going to be put into the House?
I expect to see it in November. There's always a few I's to dot and T's to cross, but basically it's ready to go. And so, we're going to kick off a really big debate that will introduce the idea that the treaty, if it's going to influence the way we live in New Zealand, we'll have a right to say something about it. For too long, it's been held back behind closed doors, and if you're not the right person or with the right opinion, you don't deserve to say anything. Actually, we're going to flip that on its head.
All right. What about the seeming futility of this exercise that you're going through, David, because the Prime Minister says National's not going to support it, New Zealand First aren't going to support it, it's taken as read that Labour, the Greens and the Māori Party won't be supporting it, we're going to the first reading, we're going to the Select Committee, then it's dead in the water. What is the point, David?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, they say that, but ultimately, they're politicians and they're going to behave the way they perceive voters want them to behave. And I suspect that there'll be some polls about what people think about the Treaty Principles Bill once the full content is known. And I'd just say to all of those parties, you might want to see what it says exactly and how people respond before you take a position. But second of all, let's just say for a moment that you're right, and that they've backed themselves into such a corner that they can't ever vote for it beyond the first reading. It still means, as I just said, that we've all of a sudden democratised constitutional debate in New Zealand for too long. You've got to be a so-called treaty expert, member of the judiciary, an academic, and someone with the quote-unquote correct opinion. Otherwise, you don't get a say. We're introducing the idea that everyone who has to live under our constitutional arrangements actually can have a say about it. And it might just be that most people believe that actually the Crown is sovereign, that everyone has equal rights, and that we're a country made up of many strands where your chances and choices in life shouldn't be influenced by who your ancestors were, but rather by the fact you're a human being and a citizen of this country.
Now, you've already put out some press releases essentially outlining what you want to put into this bill, the three principles that you've espoused so far. Off the top of my head, number one, the Parliament of New Zealand is sovereign. The government of New Zealand is sovereign. It makes the rules. Number two, everybody shall have chieftainship or ownership over their own land and property. And three, every New Zealander is equal before the law. Will there be any substantial differences in the final bill that is put before the Parliament?
You might see some acknowledgement of pre-1840 Māori rights, because some of the criticism that we've had as well, you've ridden Māori out of it. I'm quite happy to say that pre-1840 Māori had certain rights that Hapu signed up to protect. But ultimately, those rights apply to everybody. It's just that there's some things that Māori had, such as particular land and customs that existed in 1840. But that's not actually a different type of right from what everyone else has. Everybody has customs, everybody has property, and all of us should have the right to acknowledge those. What I say to the critics is we're not taking anything away from Māori, far from it. We're extending the rights to own your property, to celebrate your customs and your culture to everybody, and that actually makes it stronger. So I don't think that's a major change, but I think you'll see some acknowledgement of the concerns that people have raised in the lead up to launching it.
Right, because you will be well aware that there was an absolutely scathing article about this bill in, I think, the Post, or certainly on the Stuff website, or in the Sunday Star Times at the weekend, by your very close and dear friend Andrea Vance, who says that in your bill these principles don't even mention Māori, problematic when they are derived from an agreement with and about Māori. So amidst all the criticisms that she has made about your bill in that article, do you actually take that one on board?
Well, I mean, it's nothing to do with her. She's just very, very angry these days, and she's far from the first person to say that. I can't actually remember the article because it was such a rant, but I think she accused us of looking at the treaty through the lens of liberal democracy, as if that's a bad thing. I think the real question is why people like her are so upset about this. I think it's because they know that we're starting something, that if it doesn't pass this time, it will come back. I just look at euthanasia, for example. Michael Laws, your radio host, he kicked that off back in
the 1990s, wasn't it, when he was briefly an MP? Yeah,
95, yep. It was debated. It went down by 60 votes to 30, if I remember rightly. The 2003 effort lost by only 2 votes, and then I got it over the line by about 10 votes, majority, but that wasn't until 2019. So, I kind of hope that the campaign to get the treaty recognised as a document that unifies, that gives everyone the same rights and duties to, live in this country with equal rights of citizenship. I hope it doesn't take 25 years, but I think the reason that the Andreas of the world are so angry is they kind of recognise that someone's dared to say what we're not supposed to say, and now that it's been said, very hard to put that genie back in the bottle.
The other argument that's often put up against your treaty principles bill is that principles of the treaty, which were first written into legislation as a phrase back in 1975 in that Treaty of Waitangi Act, and then infamously inserted by Geoffrey Palmer in 1986 in the SOE Act, the principles of the Treaty of Waitangi. Andrea Vance and many others write that these principles have been developed, well developed, by the courts and by the Waitangi Tribunal over the last half century, in particular over the last, shall we say, 35 years since the 1987 Lands case. Can you agree that they might have a point, that some principles have been written and put into, if not legislation, certainly put into judicial judgments?
Well, it's certainly true that the Waitangi Tribunal and the public service and the academics and courts have all spent a lot of time judging and writing and opining about what the principles of the treaty means. But what they forget, the whole concept was only introduced by Parliament in the first place. If Parliament hadn't said there were principles, they wouldn't have done any of that. We have the right, as Parliament, to say, actually, you know what, when we said there are principles, this is what we meant. And I think what all those people forget is that this is actually a democracy. It's not a country ruled by judges or academics or media, public service, or the Waitangi Tribunal. It's actually ruled by a parliament that everyone has an equal right to elect. So, yep, no question that they've made all those judgments, but they ultimately have only done that in response to Parliament, which has the right to answer back to them again. That's how it works. Second of all, let's just ask what the consequences are. So we've had a set of principles derived which say that we are effectively a partnership between races, that there needs to be active protection. Those aren't, that there's a special relationship between Māori and the Crown that no one else has. None of that is consistent with a liberal democratic society. Remember, that's the thing that I think Andrea Vance actually criticised us for. A liberal democratic society where everyone has equal rights. The kind of society that has the ability to succeed by giving everybody that equal chance to succeed on their own effort. And what the opponents really need to do has come out and explained to me and everyone who supports the Treaty Principles Bill, where in the world has it been a success to say that you start with two different sets of rights? So some people can be on a public health board. Some people can be on a Three Waters Governance Board, that there's going to be co-governance of the public sector. There's no society in history that succeeded with those sorts of ideas, but there's lots that have gone terribly wrong. The only societies that have succeeded are those that have equal rights for all people. And let me just head off another criticism. Some people say, well, there's no principles, just, you know, deny that. We're sick of all this. We deny that it happens. But the truth is, if we don't confront this issue and properly debate what our treaty means, then eventually there will be another left-wing government. And much as left-wing governments have throughout New Zealand history, if the right doesn't stake its claim when it's in power, the left will carry on just as their predecessors have left off, and this country will gradually track to the left over the generations.
Well, I'll quote from Andrea Vance's article because I've brought it up this morning. She says, there has always been a base for old-fashioned racism in New Zealand politics. Seymour fans the flames by tying the treaty to an undercurrent of Pākehā unease about the renaissance of Maori culture. And that's the basis on which Seymour wants to have this debate, through the warping lens of resentment. Do you believe that there is resentment increasing in New Zealand society because of what has happened, particularly through some of the legislative moves made by the previous government?
Well, there is a warping lens of resentment, but I think it's the author of that piece who's looking through it. Man, it's some angry stuff, isn't it? But let's get back to the basic facts. The idea that we all have equal rights, born as human beings, that we share in universal humanity, that's a powerful, animating idea. New Zealand, for example, has signed up to the International Convention on the elimination of all forms of racial discrimination. Our government signed that. It is a binding legal document that we cannot treat people differently on the basis of their ethnic background. It's something that people have fought for in the United States. People have fought for it in South Africa. In fact, throughout history, that basic idea that we should all be equal has animated just about every good movement, from Votes for Women under Kate Shepherd to gay rights in New Zealand in the 1980s, the idea that we should not face discrimination based on characteristics about which we cannot change, that is a very powerful idea and one that I'm really proud to stand up for. And I think people who say, oh, well, the only reason you're doing this is because of racial resentment and a so-called warping lens. I mean, it's just, it's just really low-quality stuff. I think we need a higher level of debate and say, well, you know, does our treaty create a partnership between races or a society of equal rights? It's really that simple. And I think the reason people think so, you know, get up about it and saying all these crazy things is they know I'm right about that.
Okay, well, let's talk about the attitude then of your coalition partners. The National Party, not untypically, I suppose, just does not want to enter into this debate because I think they're too blinking scared. On the other hand, New Zealand First says, well, there are no principles. There were no principles written in the treaty. It is a phrase inserted into various pieces of legislation. We want to go around, and I think they've quoted 55 pieces of legislation that have the principles of the Treaty of Waitangi written into them. New Zealand First want to go along and go around those 55 pieces of legislation and take that phrase out. If you did that, would that make life a lot simpler?
Well, I support that, and actually we'll certainly vote for the bills to remove those treaty references when they come before Parliament, no question. But I also know that the Labor Party and their accomplices, Greens and Te Pāti Māori, will be back in power. Hopefully not in 2 years, hopefully not in 5 years, but sooner or later they're going to be back in power. And knowing what I know about parliamentary procedure, they could actually reinsert all of those references in 1 week, and then they're back in business. And this is what always happens with Labor governments. They do a whole lot of radical stuff. The Nats get in and say, oh, no, it's all okay, no need to rock the boat. And then Labor just cackle away, get back in, continue carrying out their agenda as though nothing's changed. I mean, you just have to ask yourself, if Helen Clark had fallen into a deep coma the night that John Key was elected and woken up 9 years later, what about Helen Clark's agenda could you honestly say had been reversed? Very, very challenging.
Well, the foreshore and seabed bill had been not reversed, but certainly amended, probably for the worse, I would say, by the way. But he did push back on that legislation, didn't he?
Well, that's the point there, right? I mean, that was done at the behest of the Maori Party. That's the best example you can come up with, and I think you've really reinforced my point even more strongly than I could have hoped. But, you know, the fact is you need ACT. Because we are prepared to take on tough issues. You've seen it with euthanasia, you've seen it with gun laws, you've seen it with COVID. And we're prepared to run against the crowd and, you know, sometimes get a bit of a beating along the way, but it's for the good of New Zealand. So, you know, I appreciate what they're saying, but at the end of the day, if we don't take on this issue, you know, if we pretend that it's not there, or we pretend that we can just make the whole idea of principles disappear, you know, we're going to find that we just pause the decline. What we need to do is make a positive statement that the treaty actually, if you read it, is a fabulous document. The Crown has the right to govern. We all have the right to self-determine, live our lives our way, keep our property, which I, you know, fully support the treaty settlement process. I think a lot of Maori were very poorly dealt to, particularly in the 1800s, and we should reverse that. I happened to be at a meeting I've stepped out of on Great South Road, so, you know, that history is still with us. But we all have the same rights and duties. Ngā tikanga katoa re te tahi. It's right there in front of you in the Maori text. We need to have a positive debate and positively define the treaty as something that is good for all of us. Because otherwise, if you just pretend there's nothing to see here and try and suppress it, the other side get back in power in, you know, 2 or 5 or 10 years' time, and then they just carry on like we were never there.
But the other thing, David, when the other side do get back in power, and we know it will happen, even in the highly unlikely event of this bill passing in the parliament, going to a referendum, and then being voted in favour of by the public, by the electorate, won't the left-leaning government of the future be able to just repeal it the way that the current coalition government has repealed many other acts of the previous government?
Not if it was passed by referendum. It would then be entrenched and it would require...
So that is the legislation, is it? So if something is passed by referendum, it is entrenched and cannot be overturned by an incoming government?
Well, yeah, it's like the electoral system. I mean, you can't just come in and, you know, change the electoral system because it was decided by referendum. So on a technical level, you know, that's how it would work. But I just make the point that, you know, even if it doesn't pass this time, you know, the other guys get in, but the debate has shifted because there are a whole lot of people that have had a say, and people say, well, actually, you know, there is a legitimate view now that the treaty gave us all equal rights. I reject what you're saying. I have a right to have a say. That's the real shift. That's how you change the direction of New Zealand, by giving a legitimate voice to people who, you know, as dear old Andrea that you quote says, look at New Zealand and the treaty through a, quote, liberal democratic lens.
All right. Just then, from a technical point of view, again, when it comes to the select committee process, how long will that select committee process go on for?
6 months.
So it is going to be the full Monty. It's not going to be just swept aside by other parties in the parliament saying, oh, this is not going anywhere, so 3 weeks or whatever. And will there be, obviously, opportunities for person after person from the public or various organisations to submit on the treaty?
Well, that's up to the select committee.
By the way, which select committee does it go to, David?
Justice. So there is a theoretical possibility that the select committee could refuse to hear public submission. I think I would regard that as a terrible breach of good faith.
Who's the chair of the Justice Select Committee?
I think it is a guy from Rangitata.
Oh, James Meagher? James Meagher, the first term MP, a young Māori man, highly recommended, highly thought of inside the National Party.
Yeah, well, you'd have to hope that he'll also be a highly constructive Justice Select Committee chair. There's absolutely no reason to think that there won't be a normal process, just like any other bill.
Okay. Talking of select committees, and I know that we were only budgeted for 20 minutes, I promise I'll make this the final question because you do have other commitments. Talking of select committees, you want to put forward a bill about a four-year term for the Parliament, but you want select committees run by the opposition. I'm intrigued by that particular twist in this four-year term bill that you are talking about. Can you just give me, before we let you go this morning, David, your rationale for letting select committees in a four-year parliamentary term be run by the opposition?
Yeah, well, first of all, can I just start by saying we need a four-year term. Every politician privately agrees with that. Very few are prepared to put their head over the parapet and say it. I actually put up a members' bill last term when we were in opposition. It never got debated, but now it's in the coalition agreement to be debated. So that's happening. Second point is, New Zealand's actually had two referendums on the select committees, on the four-year term before. Both of them failed. That's why we still have a three-year term. My view is that New Zealanders don't trust politicians enough to give them 4 years totally unfettered, and nor should they. That's why it's absolutely critical that we make sure that there is some sort of check and balance, because remember, we don't have an upper house, we don't have a written constitution, we don't have states or provinces. If you've ever watched that movie, The Castle, couldn't happen in New Zealand because he wouldn't have had a constitution to go and appeal to. So, you know, absolutely critical that we get some other checks and balances in order to make a four-year term politically viable and make sure that there actually is some stability and some scrutiny. You're going to give these guys 4 years. Now, you know, you could have an upper house, you could have a written constitution, you couldn't have states or provinces, but all of those are very cumbersome or expensive. All I'm proposing is that the select committee membership be made proportional to the non-ministerial members of Parliament. Once you take the ministers out of the government, the opposition actually has the majority. So the select committees, for the most part, would have an opposition majority. Now, it depends how big the government majority is in total and how many of the ministers and so on, but for the most part, you'd have an opposition majority. And if you want to know what that looks like, if you remember the COVID committee that Simon Bridges chaired in the first lockdown in 2020, it would be a lot like that.
Very good, And that worked well, didn't it? I thought there was some good stuff came out of that. No action was ever taken, but it was good debate, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that's kind of the point, that ultimately the government still has the full majority in the full parliament, so the government's still in control, but you kind of create these mini parliaments run by the opposition to do the scrutiny. And I think we need that level of scrutiny because, you know, at the moment, the select committees, for the most part, have the same majority as the government. So the people on the select committees, for the most part, are just doing whatever the government wants. And that's not scrutiny. So, look, you know, four-year term, independent select committees, I think would be a major improvement in the level of democracy in New Zealand, the quality of policy making. And again, it's just one of these things that ACT does where, you know, it may be a bit nerdy, it may be a bit controversial, but I think it's for the good of New Zealand.
Very good, David. I thank you for your time this morning. I'll allow you to go back to your previous commitment, but we really appreciate you stepping out of that meeting to spend a little bit of time with us here this morning. Nice talking with you.
Not a worry. Bye for now.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.